Blog Talk Radio.
Find yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger. When it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but we are never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds Program. Today is Monday, March 18th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs
with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're glad to have you today on this Monday. I'm sorry for the late start, but of course another inconsiderate doctor's appointment, and not concerned about the working man at all. But again, appointment at 10 o'clock, and I didn't see the doctor until 11:20 when he walks in the room. So I'm not going to vent too much about that. Everybody in America has dealt with that disrespect before, so no worries at all. Not going to beat that dead horse because all of y'all beat it probably on a daily basis. So nonetheless, we are back here starting late, but nonetheless, we are here. And it is Schneider Party of Four. Jen is doing absolutely fine and dandy. Many of you young ladies have had C-sections in the past, and I must say that Trooper Jen, nothing but Tylenol. No kidding. No. Would you like some Percocet? Nope, I'm good. Would you like any Darvocet? Nope, I'm good. Would you like any IV drip pain medication? Nope, I'm good. Tylenol, and that is it. So she is quite the trooper. Same thing with Caleb when she had her C-section. And nurses say, hey, that's major surgery, you know. And good for her. Just Tylenol, that is it. So she is a trooper, and but she's doing very, very well. And she is nursing Lily successfully, which is wonderful. You know, she nursed Caleb for over about 13 months, 14 months. So we're going to try to do that again. I've got a big hand in that. She's going to be doing that hopefully as well. So Jen is doing fabulous. How awesome is that? Healthy mama, doing well, recovering well. And then Caleb's doing good. I posted a picture a little bit earlier. I know it. He's doing very well, eating some applesauce now as we get home, and he loves his little sister. I posted a picture earlier of him holding her last night, and he was kind of caressing her hair and holding her and things like that, wanting to share toys with her and saying he hadn't got Lily yet, but she's a baby, baby, baby. So he's been so far quite the trooper with little Lily, and Lily's doing great too. No problems there. Issues with really with nursing or anything like that. All the tests have come back absolutely positive, and where they need to be. So she's doing very, very well, and so just very, very blessed with a wonderful, happy, and healthy family. And so we appreciate all the wonderful comments that we had on Facebook as over the weekend. We were posting pictures and giving you updates about, hey, you know, we're up at 3:30, left at 4:30, at the hospital at 5, got her back at 7:30, baby delivered, and trying to keep y'all updated as much as possible on Facebook and posting pictures when we could. So yeah, that's Caleb that you hear in the background. Lily is down for a nap. That's Caleb eating his applesauce. So Christmas chick, so there you go. So anyhow, everything is going absolutely wonderful. We appreciate all the great comments you've had. We got a great show lined up for you today. The show must go on. Actually, we did broadcast live for about 10 minutes on Friday. We started up the old webcam there in the hospital room. We had gotten settled enough to where I thought we could get a show done successfully. So we did, and that was the first photos of Lily that you guys saw, our fans, Chicken Whisper fans here on Blog Talk Radio. So if you tuned in on Friday, it was a short personal show, and you saw live pictures of Mommy and Baby. So that was fun. I can't remember if we did that with Caleb or not, but we may have had a show from the hospital room. We did? Okay, cool. And so Jen's saying, yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. I said, awesome, because y'all are not only listeners but fans and friends, and a lot of you are as close as family, if not closer in some cases. So, but we appreciate you. We got a great show lined up for you today. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Supply. And he is going to be here, and we've got a great topic talking about Favus and tube feeding. So a couple of topics there from Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. And so I'm going to go over ahead here and see. We've got him called in right now. So without further delay, we're going to go over here to the phone lines, and let's give him a big welcome in the chat room. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today. Sorry about the delay.
Oh, not a problem, Andy. No problem.
Appreciate you coming on, being flexible. Glad you're here, too. We got two interesting topics today. Of course, Favus, which we're anxious to hear about, and, of course, tube feeding, because many listeners may have been out there when either they called you and you suggested that they tube feed, or there may be times that you've discussed different issues, medical problems, what have you, and you say, hey, what you may end up having to do is tube feed the bird. So you can say, hey, what you might need to do is tube feed the bird, but that might not mean a lot to a lot of people. So you're going to teach us a little bit about that, how to do it, risks, if any, non-risks, if any, and when we might have to do that, and how long we'd have to do that. So I know that all of our listeners are out there with their Chicken Whisper notebooks ready to take some notes from you. And you had a couple of other topics as well, I think, regarding homeschoolers. Now, a lot of folks out there are homeschoolers, and they listen to the show. They incorporate the show with their curriculum, which is great. We meet a lot of them on the road. Oh, we listen to your show, and we use it with some of our curriculum. We hatch chicks at home with our homeschool curriculum and things. So I know you wanted to share something also today during the show about NASA and maybe field trips and maybe things they may add to their curriculum as homeschoolers as well. So we got a full show for you.
Yeah, I have the opportunity here. I've got a friend that works down here at Wallops Island. Wallops Island is about an hour and 45 minutes or so south here down in Virginia. And those who are familiar with Assateague Seashore, it's right down there. Anyway, he is a machinist, engineer for a company there that builds a lot of the different rockets and stuff that they launch from there. And a lot of them are research rockets. They're not huge like you see the space shuttle and everything else. But they are getting ready this year, I think starting later this month up through June, July. They're going to be launching at least five rockets from there, and at least one of them is going to be a major rocket. I'm not overly familiar with the particular rocket, but it's going to be, from what I understand, the largest launch vehicle that they've ever launched from that facility. I believe he told me the other day that the rocket was 13 feet in diameter. It's called an Antares, and the design of this thing is, this is going to, we have no way of getting things to the space shuttle other than relying on other countries at this point. And I think that he was telling me that this is going to be part of that program of getting things up to the space shuttle and so on. And it's, every time we call him Rocket Man, his real name is Tom Shockley, but he's quite a character to talk to. He's he's been doing it for some 35 years, making these rockets and so on and so forth. So it's an interesting thing to sit and talk with him. But at any rate, he's familiar with my grandson, as some people that listen to the show are, have seen Brandon and met him and what have you. But he's going to arrange for Brandon and I to go down and meet him down there this summer, and we're going to get a tour of the facility where they actually make some of the rockets and where you'll actually be able to touch a rocket that's in production and that kind of thing, see how it's made, how they make the parts, and how they do some of the testing in-house as far as parts and so on and so forth are concerned. Because a lot of things they have to solve for this. But that being said, the interesting part of this is that, and I guess, a lot of people don't or can't see the value in research as far as the rockets are concerned, landing on the moon and going to Mars and all these other things. I mean, some people see it. Some people see it as a waste of tax dollars and so on.
Wait, landing on the moon? Don't you spread that rumor here on this radio show.
Yeah, it was all done in a movie studio, I know. But, a lot of the things that people don't understand is that NASA is responsible for many of the breakthroughs in technology, and a lot of that technology is just handed over to companies free of charge who then go off and make a profit from it. So our tax dollars really do a lot of benefit all the way around for us. One thing he did mention to me, that the insulin pump was something that came from NASA, and I found that quite interesting. And I've been a model builder all my life, still continue to build models, doing so with my grandson and what have you. And so the whole thing intrigues me, may not intrigue a whole lot of other people. But then I got thinking about, all the people at homeschool and that more than likely listen to this show, so that's why I brought it up to you. And he told me to go to NASA, NASA.gov, and I was just floored by all of the information, pictures of just about any project that they've done, including current ones that are available to you there. And then they have a kids section. They have a section for teachers and that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to throw it out there for whatever it's worth to those people who may be interested in it and furthering the science capabilities of their youngsters. Because in my opinion, the more you know about science and math and reading and those kinds of things, I think the further in life that you'll go.
And maybe we'll move up from 49 or whatever we are ranked now as far as advancement in education with our public schools in the world. So, take advantage of that, folks, and, do a little bit of education on your own with your kids as well, even if they are in the public school system. But you're right, science and math, and very important, very important.
It's a great website, well put together. You can see from pictures of how they were testing parachutes on one of the capsules that they're working on for a new project that's due out next year to be launched, deep space vehicle of some sort. I can't remember all the things. I went through it so quick, didn't have a whole lot of time to spend on the site, but I'm obviously going to be going back. Like I said, the kids section goes from kindergarten right up through 12th grade, so it's more advanced, obviously, for the older kids. I just thought it was something great to throw out there because most people, if they're on the net, they can go there, and there's your tax dollars at work, so you might as well take advantage of it. And, they have all kinds of different programs available to a lot of people, kids and so on, and it's worth it just to go there. And I'll tell you what, it's better than a kid playing a video game, and if you want to sit him down in front of a computer, this is one way to do it. And it's not a video game that he's going to play that where he isn't going to learn something other than how to play cops and robbers and shoot things and what have you. So from my perspective, I thought it was a great learning tool, and indoctrinating my grandson into it too. He likes to play truck games and all that other stuff. And when I have him usually on a Saturday, we don't do a whole lot of that. So hopefully people might see it the same way.
Speaking of your grandson, I'm still waiting for the day you finally just give in and give him that die-cast metal car. And you shared that, and I can't remember the model of it. It was like a Rambler or something, and that it's close to you, is one of your favorites ever, and you have this beautiful scale die-cast car, and you wanted it, and nope, can't have that. You can have this one here, but what model car, the 57 Nomad or something
like
that?
Well, I broke down and gave him the 57 Chevy Nomad, the black one. That I did do.
But okay.
The other one that he really wants is a similar car, a little bit smaller in scale, that is a real collectible. There may be 1,000 of them out there, but in my travels I've never seen another one. And it is a Chevy Nomad wagon and why does his name escape me now, but he was a one of the fathers, I believe, of the Corvette. Duntov was his name, and he was so it's got his name on it. It's a commemorative special for I think his name was Ivan. I'm not sure. But anyway, I have that car, and he's chomping at the bit to want that, but he ain't getting that one. No. You see, it's all an issue of how well you take care of it. See, my thing is, if I give you something, I give it. And I don't give it with strings attached. But if you give it and you don't take care of it, then I don't give again. And I don't want to hear that Riley broke it, because if Riley broke it, she's 2, you're almost 8. If she broke it, that means you didn't take care of it. You didn't do your due diligence with it. You left it somewhere where Riley could get it. So that's how I operate. So I don't take those excuses that other people might take. I look at it and I say, no, you didn't take care of it. But if you had taken care of it and put it away where it belonged, Riley couldn't have got it. And guess what? XYZ car or whatever it is might not have been broken. And so I'm trying to teach him some patience. As you all know, he's ADHD, and he can be off the wall some days. I like to take him without any medication at all, because he's more interactive and stuff. And either way, it doesn't matter to me. I have no problems with him whatsoever, because we have rules, we have regulations, and this is how it's going to be done. If you don't like it, we're not doing it. Sit in the corner. I don't care. Your choice. You know. And so I never have to do that. That's the cool part about it. You know, it's a great experience. We do a lot of different things, and we're going to be actuality that Antares rocket. We're going to go down. My friend Tom Rocket Man, he gave me a location to go to. Where there won't be 95,000 people watching this thing. And so we can go down when it's scheduled to go, and we will be less than a mile from where the actual rocket launch takes place. So we'll be able to see it, feel it, hear it, and everything else. So it's exciting. It's a great thing to be able to be in a position to do something like that. So we look forward to doing that. And I just thought I'd pass the NASA.gov thing on to those who homeschool, and maybe they can find something on there that their children will be interested in and enjoy it. That's all.
That sounds awesome. Love to hear that, and thanks for sharing that. So,
sure.
Today's chicken topic is, of course, Favus and tube feeding. So get those notebooks ready, and we'll go ahead and start that right now.
Yeah, I bring up the tube feeding thing because I've had some experiences with some folks this week that have had to take on this chore. And you don't want to tube feed unless you absolutely have to, and that is when the bird itself is not accepting the food at all. And it's something that you have to get onto immediately, because the longer it goes, the less time you have. And I can't give you an actual window of opportunity as to whether it would be 1 day, 2 days, but certainly the longer it goes, the harder it is to bring them back in and get them eating on their own. You do stand a reasonable chance of getting a bird to recover from that particular position where they're not taking food on their own and getting a full or close to a full recovery by the bird. Because if they don't, what they'll do is they'll continue to take all of the nutrients out of their system. They will take all the protein, vitamins, and minerals and stuff from the bones, the breast muscle, and that kind of thing. And when you go to pick them up, you'll see the breast has all gone away and so on and so forth. And when they get to that point, it is a battle to get them back. I would say when you get a bird that's that debilitated, you're probably looking at maybe less than 50-50 that you're going to be able to turn that ship around. But they're kind of just like humans, too. You know, when humans' kidneys shut down and things of that nature, they can be extremely difficult to jumpstart those, too. There's no magic bullet to do so as a general rule. So with chickens, it's the same way. You're going to tube feed them. Technically, it doesn't matter what you feed them, but you want to make sure that you're feeding often, and that you're feeding something that is good nutritionally, protein, some carbohydrates, and so on. Most birds that have stopped eating, obviously, have then gone into a diarrhea situation where the droppings are just loose and some green bile. The reason these droppings get dark or green is because the gallbladder is continually putting out bile from the liver, and such, and it's not being mixed with any feed for breaking anything down or helping digestion, and so it's just being defecated out at the end of the day, and it comes out in that green. Sometimes it's dark, sometimes it's a lighter color. And generally speaking, when we get into looking at the dropping, as that dropping progresses from a darker green to a more light green and then to a what I would call a fluorescent green, the chances then of bringing a bird back are slim to none. It has been done. I've helped people do it, but the odds are extremely loaded against you. So once you recognize the bird's not eating, and I would give them every opportunity to eat on their own, their favorite treat, wet feed. Birds seem to like wet feed better than they do dry feed when they're not feeling well. Sometimes they'll eat their favorite treat, eat it for a while, then stop eating that. Very difficult to diagnose or to even guess just what's going on within the digestive system, because it can be anything. It can be worms, it can be a bad case of coccidiosis that just doesn't want to respond to medication. It can be just anything you want to throw at it is basically it. It can be lymphoid leucosis, it can be Merrick's, it can be all of these things that will end up shutting down the bird's digestive system. So, but whatever you make your feed out of, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. I have instructed people to use some yogurt, some apple, pear, banana. You can use baby parrot feed. It really doesn't matter at the end of the day, as long as what you're doing is syringeable. So the other thing I wanted to talk about as far as the tube feeding is concerned, generally speaking, it's almost impossible to get a tube into the bird's glottis. The glottis is where the bird breathes. We have been over this subject before, but I felt it was appropriate to jump back into it again because there were a lot of questions from a lot of different folks from different places about how to do this. And it is relatively simple, and I'll go through that with you right now. When you open the bird's mouth and you look in the bird's mouth, first thing you're going to see, obviously, is the tongue. And behind the tongue, in the floor, what we call the floor of the mouth, is the glottis. That's where the bird breathes, okay? You want to keep anything and everything, liquid or powder or whatever, away from that particular area. Because as the bird breathes and so on, that glottis opens and closes. And if you look at it before you do any attempt to tube feed, you'll see that. You'll see the glottis opening and closing, open and closing. So right off the bat, you know to stay away from that particular area. And that big, giant, dark hole in the back, that's the esophagus. That's where they eat. So the two areas are separated. So it is virtually almost, and I say almost, and I'll explain that in a minute, impossible to aspirate a bird when you're tube feeding if you do it properly. And worrying about where the tube goes is not necessary to worry about if you just pay attention to what I call the anatomical landmarks, just like any surgeon would do who is contemplating doing any kind of surgery. He is running through in his mind where the incision is going to be made, what lies as a general rule under that incision with muscle, fat, any nerves, blood vessels, and all that kind of stuff. Well, you're kind of going to do the same thing, not just as quite as in-depth, by looking for the glottis, noting that, and noting that the esophagus is the big giant hole in the back. Once you've established that in your mind, then all you really need to do is get a tube and size it up for the bird. And by that, you want to use a tube that is going to go into the crop and be able to come out the mouth so that you can put a syringe on the end of it and put in the food that you need to do for the bird. Now, the way to do that is to take the tube before you do anything and locate the crop in the middle of the chest at the base of the neck where the clavicle comes in. That's the wishbone. So the wishbone there would be with the small part down and the two parts up holding the breast together forming a V. Right behind that is the crop. So if you get to that V and you put the tube there and then go up under the lower mandible or the lower part of the beak and come out past the beak whatever you feel comfortable with, 6 inches, 8 inches, more tubing. Make a mark where the tubing intersects or comes at the end of the beak, and that will give you a estimate of where you are when you start putting this tube down the bird's throat. You're going to take the excess tubing, cut it off. You're going to take a syringe. You're going to take the solution that you made to feed the bird with. It really doesn't matter what you put in it. I've instructed some people in some cases to take some cooked ground hamburger and really chop it up real, real fine. It all has to be a syringeable. That's all you care about. You don't want to be there trying to struggle with a syringe that keeps locking up on you and makes it more traumatic for you and the bird. And you want to take that syringe, put it on the tubing. You want to fill the tubing, then go back and fill the syringe again so that the tube and the syringe all full all at one time, okay? Then don't necessarily have to do this, but I think it makes it easier. Just a little bit of any kind of cooking oil put on the tubing, and then you're going to go over the top of the tongue, aim for the big dark hole in the back. You're going to push it down slowly until you get close to the mark that you made on the at the end of the bird's beak. Doesn't have to be exact. And then you're slowly going to push the syringe so that the material in the syringe goes into the crop. Everybody always asks how much. A couple of tablespoons worth, maybe 20 to 30 cc's, that'd be appropriate. What I would do is watch and see how the crop expands in the bird's chest. If there's no expansion, I'd put in more. The only thing you have to worry about, and here's where the iffy part comes in, where I was talking about in the beginning, where I said virtually almost can't aspirate the bird. There is no mechanism to hold feed in the crop. So when you put whatever you're putting in the crop, if you overfill it, it's going to come right back up in the bird's mouth, the bird's going to breathe, and the bird's going to be dead. Now, there are people that I've tried to instruct to do this and who felt uncomfortable with it and have felt more comfortable using a syringe. They're not my birds, so on that aspect of it, I don't care how you do it. If you're more comfortable using a syringe, but in my opinion, you run more of a risk with the syringe than you would with the tube. The tube is directly into the crop, whereas you're putting liquid in the mouth, and one hiccup by the bird, and you have a dead bird. So just watch what you're doing, and as you, we all know what a full crop looks like. We just don't want an overfull crop, so I don't think it's hard to make that judgment. So again, you're going to put that tube straight down the back of the throat, push it into where your mark is, close to it, and you're going to slowly take that syringe, empty it out into the bird. Then you're going to judge for yourself. If you're not comfortable putting any more in, don't. Just feed the bird more often, okay? How often should you do it? On a general rule basis, about every 3 hours, 4 hours, in that range, in with those. And the reason for that is it takes about that long for the feed that you're giving it to get through. Because it's liquid, it might get through a little bit faster, probably more in the three-hour range. And you keep doing that until you have decided that you're not going to be able to get anywhere with this particular bird, and then you have to weigh your options as to, you know, which direction you'll go with this after you complete this this particular endeavor. But so there isn't any real time frame. I have somebody now who's been doing it for close to, I guess it's close to a week now, and I don't think we're making the progress that we should make. And if you were to look at this particular bird, you would swear up and down there wasn't anything wrong with it. But we've done a lot of different things to it, and my applause goes to the individual that's taking care of this bird, because that's a monumental undertaking from the standpoint of time and devotion of the owner to the bird, so I applaud that. But anyway, that's how the tube feeding basically goes. It's not rocket science. It's real easy to do. The reason we were putting some hamburger meat in there was to get some real good protein into the bird in a small amount. These are things you can do, and like I said, it doesn't matter to me if you go to the store and you get parrot food off the shelf. Something is always better than nothing. The only situation that you'd really have to watch out for anything again is the overfilling of the crop. It's virtually impossible. Once you see the glottis and see how it operates, you would have to virtually get a hold of it practically and force it down through there, and that's not really what you're going to be doing. When you're going into that esophagus in the back, there is nothing to really hold you from pushing it down. You might need a little bit of resistance as it curves down the back of the throat, but there shouldn't be any hardcore, you know, bending the tubing type resistance. If there is, there might be something else going on, but it should not be a big deal to do this. This should be something that you should be able to do in a matter of minutes, get it over with, and go on. And like I said, the time frame, about every 3 hours, maybe four, and that kind of thing. And if you're not up for getting up in the middle of the night just before you go to bed, make sure you put a reasonable amount of food in the crop so that the bird is hydrated and everything overnight and start it back out in the morning again. But that's about all you can do. And I'm, most of the time we're looking at 50-50 when a bird gets to the point where they won't eat. I've seen some of them, for unknown reasons, just all of a sudden start to eat, come right back, go on. Everybody's that dumb and happy with it, and it works out fine. I've seen other times where did everything but throw the kitchen sink at them and can't get them to eat on their own. And even with the tube feeding, they seem to get more and more debilitated, and it's hard to put your finger on exactly what's causing that. It could be Marek's. It could be lymphoid leucosis, which are all not curable, basically, when you get to this particular point. So I wanted to bring it up because I think it's an important subject to talk about. The more you talk about it, the better people will understand it and hopefully get closer to it. And we can. I don't know if you wanted to take a break at the top of the hour. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes by my clock.
We can go ahead and take one now.
You want to do that, fine. And we'll come back and finish up with Thavis. How's that?
That sounds like a plan. No worries at all. You're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Today's guest, of course, being Monday, is Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. And you can visit them online, firststatevetsupply.com. And we'll continue with Thavis right after this short break.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens.
and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Two things. Real quick, before we bring Peter Brown back on to finish up Favis, one is we hope you have already entered our March Chicken Coop Contest brought to you by Brensea.com. They released a line of 2 different chicken coops last year, and they're selling very well, but you have a chance to win the larger of the 2 chicken coops by entering the contest. Let me tell you how to do that. Very, very simple. No blog to like, no Facebook page to like, no comment to leave, nothing like that. All you have to do is send us an email. It's very, very simple. So if you want to enter the Chicken Coop Contest, send me an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. That's contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay? In the subject line of the email, please put Coop Contest. Okay, in the subject line of the email, please put Coop Contest. And then down in the email itself, I need 3 things from you: your name, shipping address, and phone number. Okay, your name, shipping address, and phone number. And then hit send, and that is your entry. 1 entry per household. So if you and 19 kids and your husband live in one house, you have 1 entry. If you have 9 cousins that live in different houses in New York, you live in Colorado, they don't keep chickens, but you do. They could enter each one of their your cousins 9 times, 1 entry per household. And then if they win, then they can have me ship the coop to you. So pretty simple there, but 1 entry per household, lower 48 states only, please. If you enter more than once, you'll be disqualified. And what we're going to do, this coop, the deadline to enter actually is Thursday, March the 28th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay, that'll be Thursday, March 28th at 11:59 p.m. We'll give this coop away on Good Friday, Friday the 29th, live here on the radio show. We will call the winner live on the show. Now, you do not have to be listening live to win. If I can't get in touch with you during the show, that's fine. I'll get in contact with you. I'll call you. I'll send you an email. I'll send you a letter. Or the coop just may arrive at the address you registered with if I can't get in touch with you. But you do not have to listen that day to actually win. The coop is an $800 value, and it includes the coop and the run. And if my memory serves, it's for, I want to say, 10 or 12 chickens. And so 10 or 12 chickens includes the coop and the run from Brensea.com. You can go over and take a look at the coop over there and see all about it, read all about it. Brensea, Brinsea.com, and take a look at that. Also, I'm hoping tomorrow, I'll finalize everything up this afternoon, but you know, we've been talking about having one on for a while, and it may end up a regular gig, and maybe just on occasion, or it may just be tomorrow. But we're hoping to have... you may follow her on Facebook, Prepper Penny on tomorrow. And she's just kind of I don't know if this is an official title, but she's a prepper and a, food storage and, what did I post in the chat room? And a coupon clipper, money-saving guru. And so she sounds like multi-talented and multi-skilled. So we're anxious to have her on tomorrow, and we're going to narrow down to a topic that, you know, her first time on the radio, that she's most experienced with, that she's most comfortable with, and she will share that with us tomorrow. So tomorrow we've got Prepper Penny coming on, and we've talked about these shows in the past. But, you know, hey, one show we might have – Pardon me. Couldn't hit the mute button fast enough. One show we may have all about coupon clipping and tricks of the trade with regarding that and saving money and then storage. And, you know, if you're buying in bulk at a store and then store food and prepper and homesteading and making things for that you might need on the homestead. So it's, I'm really excited about it. And I hope you are too. And that'll be tomorrow. Prepper Penny here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All right, let's bring Peter Brown back on. Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Peter, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, Andy, no problem whatsoever.
Great.
No,
I'm sorry, real quick. We had a question in the chat room. They said, I apologize if I missed this, but how could we tell if if I've got a dozen, 18 chickens, some tips to way to tell, and they're sorry if they missed it, on how to tell if one of their chickens is not eating properly or not eating at all?
Generally, you'll see them if they're not eating to the point, you know, where they're not consuming anything. They'll start to go off by themselves. You may even see them just standing around. Depending on what's causing the overall health issue, they may look like they have coccidiosis, where they would stand around, be the last one to get out of the coop, maybe not come out of the coop at all. Or if they do, just stand around while everybody else is foraging. One of the things that that I've said before on this show, I think, is worth repeating, and that is at every opportunity that you have, and I realize people have jobs and real lives besides just taking care of chickens and so on. But get that 5-gallon bucket out and sit in the middle of the yard and just pick up as many chickens as you can. Try not to pick up the same ones all the time, because I know a lot of folks have their favorites, and the favorites will come to you more so than one that might be a little more standoffish. And just give them a little quick look over, feel the breast and everything else, and know the difference between a bird that's falling away to nothing versus one that's, what I call fat, dumb, and happy. So, it doesn't hurt to get out there, especially when the weather's nice, before it gets blazing hot, and get out there and go through your birds. It's a great way to get acquainted with them down at their level, which is eye to eye, and see what's going on. You can pick up all kinds of problems. You can give a quick look to the head and look at the eyes. The eyes look good and clear, and the nostrils. And, if you feel like it, open the mouth at the same time. That's what I would do. I mean,
Well, come on, Doc. We know that you actually go out with your sleeping bag and have slumber parties with your chickens to make sure that they're all at peak perfection.
One would think that with this Taj Mahal we're building here. But this is what happens when you start thinking. I'm looking for, good ventilation. So we came to the conclusion yesterday with the electrician, we're going to put in the two roof vents and gable vents. We're going to box them out and put a fan in one and have it suck the air through the other side down to the floor level and back up the other side and out, so that we get a positive airflow that way, besides the ceiling fan that's in there. So that's another part of the project to add to this coop. And seeing as how you brought this up, I have the coop and the whole yard where the coop is going to be now has all been fenced in and everything else. So not that these birds will be out at night, but there will be occasion when we won't be here and there'll be somebody sitting with the birds or whatever. We worry then about daytime predators and so on. So my original thought was to bury some wire down in the ground and everything else. And then, this wasn't my idea, but this is how things get out of control. This next statement.
Uh-oh.
Somebody sent me. Well, I've been fooling around with different herbs and stuff, and I got us, we'll do a show on this because I want to share this with everybody down the road. So maybe over the next 3 or 4 weeks or so, we'll go specifically on that particular part of it. But so I'm looking to make this thing predator-proof from anything digging under the fence, because the fence itself is a real nice cedar stockade fence, 6 foot tall.
Yeah,
so, it's a nice deal. Anyway.
I just posted in the chat room. I said Doc's coop will actually have a chimney installed. And the chimney is actually going to blow black smoke into the. Wait. It will blow black smoke until the pecking order is established, and then once the pecking order is established, then white smoke will appear.
Yeah.
We will know when the pecking order has been established in your flock. So, I can't wait to see pictures of this. You're definitely going to have to.
Yeah, we're going to take you through it once it's all done and up and running. We'll explain everything hopefully in a little video or something. But so somebody had sent me this picture of like a cold frame, so to speak, but nowhere near as tall.
Right.
And the idea was to cover it with maybe 3/8 square poultry wire.
Huh.
And then, you know, let the whatever you're growing grow up through that.
Right.
So then I got met with the carpenter Saturday, and I got a idea of how I'm going to do this and kill two birds with one stone. Just putting, you know, wire down was kind of wasteful, although would do the project we want. We'd have to have a couple of feet of wire, at least a foot in the ground and a couple of feet over, so that anything that digs would have to, if you want to get in there, you're going to really have to want to.
Right.
So what I decided to do is take these things and make these cold frames and put them all around on the inside of the coop, starting at the gate where you come in and go all the way up the top, all the way across the top, and all the way back down the other side, about 3 foot out, and they will be on hinges so that you can pick them up and replant and redo the. Because, I mean, the birds are going to be on there, they're going to be pooping on it, and it's going to be going through and what have you. And then all around that periphery will be planted in different herbs, maybe some barley and some other things, and just, so they can not really pull out the roots and destroy it, but it will be there for them to forage on all day long. So that's what the idea behind that is. So it's a never-ending project at this point, but I'm excited about it. I really am. I enjoy coming up with these little ideas and things, and like I said, we'll share everything with everybody. You know, what we've done, we've got the big double doors in the front, and I had a side door put in, and, you know, we're coming down the home stretch, actually, on the building itself. That should be completed, hopefully, by this weekend, as far as that's concerned, and I've got a show this coming weekend, and I think in between that is probably, somewhere in between that is when the Tammy will be moving here, and we'll actually have live birds in the place. So we're getting there, and but it's amazing how, you know, one little thing leads to another. So my point being, anything that wants to burrow under that is going to have to burrow down and come over 3 feet at least to get into the yard. I don't think that's going to happen. So we're going to try that route anyway and see how that works. So I think it'll be healthy for the birds. It'll be something that we can, you know, keep going. You know, most of the year with something growing in it, and of course, if I don't like it, I can always take it out. So, it seems to me that it would be a reasonable way, because I thought about seeding it all down in all kinds of different herbs and stuff that I'm playing around with, and I've got a list of them, and, you know, once they tear them out, they're done, you know, and this would prevent them from doing that. So that, at least that's the thought behind it.
We're talking about where your coop could actually be featured, like like MTV's got some shows that are out. I don't own a TV, but hey, called Pimp My Coop instead of Pimp My Ride, we got Pimp My Coop, and then we've got Extreme Coop Makeover was one of them, and then Lifestyles of the Rich and Broody.
Well, I figure that, you know, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it once, and I won't have to do this 5 times.
Amen. And we preach that a lot, yep.
And get it straight the first time around. It's well-insulated and that kind of thing. It can be cleaned very, very easily, it'd be well-ventilated. And because of the way that they have to be kept up at night at some point in time, you know, I have to have a standby generator for when I'm not here and something happens and the power goes out. Because we live in a rural area. Power go out here anytime you, you know, blink your eye and it goes out. So you just never know. So, it's not going to be a huge generator, but you have to have something to keep that going. If they're in there at night and it's 90 degrees out and everything's shut up tight, so... It's an adventure, but I'm enjoying it, and it is a little bit of a research coop. We're not, you know, trying to write it off tax wise, but it is a deal where we're trying different things, and we may take things out later on and try some other things, and and as they come along and available to us. So it's an adventure, and we're enjoying it. And I'll get off that now, and I'll go on to Favus here so we can finish on time. The reason I bring up Favus is that I've seen more cases of it than this year, and when I say this year, late last year into present day, than I've seen in quite some time. For those of you that are not familiar with it, Favus is a fungal disease that chickens get. Predominantly, you will see this, and you'll first notice it, on the face itself, the wattles and or the comb. Anywhere in that particular area is where you generally will see it first. It is not limited to that area, but that, for whatever the reason, seems to be the area where it shows up first. Now, that may be because of the feathered parts of the body keep the fungus from getting right down to the skin, so that it starts out on the face and the wattles and then works its way backward. At least that's the only reasonable thing that I can come up with, it of having seen this disease for many years on and off, but was somewhat more rare than anything would be normal. So, but it is a fungal disease. Some of the names for it, obvious, would be Favus. It's also called white comb, honeycomb. The offending organism here is Trichophyton gallinae. That's Trichophyton, and then gallinae, G-A-L-L-I-N-A-E. The bad thing about this is that this can spread to humans as well. This is a something we have the unfortunate thing of being able to share with chickens. It's something that, you know, if you do see it and you want to treat it and treat it early and get rid of it, that's fine. But when it's gotten out of control, in my opinion, going from the comb to the wattles to the face and starts its way down under the skin to the feathered portions of the bird's body, it may be time for you to take a look at taking another course of action, whichever that may be. If you're interested in trying to cure it, we'll go through that here as we move on and talk about this particular disease. The reason they call it honeycomb, when you look at it, the skin thickens up, almost looks leathery, and it looks almost it's not white, it's a grayish white, okay? That's the distinction between it and other things. It is a off-white, grayish-looking white. I guess that's the best way to describe it. Sometimes a bird will look as though you've taken some cooking flour and just thrown it in its face. It'll be here, there, and yonder on the comb and the wattles and everything else. Somebody sent me a photo not too long ago of a bird that had a fairly severe case of it, and my recommendation to the person was to more than likely to euthanize the bird. The cost of taking care of it and getting rid of it, when there were quite a few other birds that were at risk, wasn't worth it to that particular individual. And
that's rare with you to even initially mention that to somebody, the going that extreme.
Yeah.
Very rare for you to even go that route. So.
Well, this person had, if my memory serves me correctly, and it doesn't always, but it really doesn't matter the number of birds, they had well over 100 birds that they were dealing with. I believe there was a human egg market involved. It doesn't pay to, if that's, you know, what you're doing, it doesn't pay to have something like this hanging around as a health hazard, not only to yourself. I don't think there would be any big deal. As far as it transferring from the outside of the egg, it certainly doesn't transfer it through the egg, but from the outside of the egg to humans, I don't think there'd be enough of it there, because most of the time, like I said, this is a situation where we see it for the most part all around the head. That's where it seems to start out. You know, again, the wattles right around the eyes. And this particular bird had a real leathery, thick look right around the all of the area around the eye and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just as obvious as the day was long to look at. And that was my main reason, you know, when you looked at, you know, there was an initial conversation about, okay, how do we do this and, you know, how do we fix it? And I explained that and what the costs might be and how hard it is and everything else. And it was decided. And like I said, I'm not sure what the ultimate end result was. I didn't hang out with it for that long. So we're seeing more of it. I've got another client that actually made the diagnosis on his own and called me for confirmation of it, and I thought that was pretty cool, and it was obvious. And see, we used to be able to go down to the drugstore and used to be able to buy a shampoo that would help with this. See, and you can't get that anymore either. It's off the market. There's talk about it coming back. Who knows? You can get the prescription strain. Okay. But we used to, and when we did this on the show last time, I said to folks, just go to Walmart or any other place and get Nizoral, was Nizoral shampoo, and it's got antifungal in it. Because on the human side, many times dandruff in humans is caused by a fungal infection in the scalp. So this would work out fine because it had the antifungal properties to it.
Ralph in the chat room said it's athlete's comb.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
yeah. Uh-huh.
That's a good analogy there. Yeah, I like that. But you know, it's something you got to be careful with. You know, when we start to look at this thing as a human health hazard, then you kind of have to decide, you know, what you're gonna do, how far you're gonna push it, and that kind of thing. Now, we can see some feather loss with this, with birds. And I dare say that some of these birds that we've seen that have no feathers on their back, that have not been treaded by a rooster or something like that, that we would probably, you know, it's a possibility that some of those, if they're not nutritional, we've seen that be nutritional here on the show as well, but certainly could be something related to a fungal infection, and they start to lose them, they become brittle and break off and that kind of stuff. So it's something that if I saw it on the body first, I would kind of be surprised, rather than around the head area. It can show up as a wrinkly looking, crusty, off white looking skin around the face as well. The wattles can do the same thing. Any of these types of conditions or symptoms to look for when you see this on these birds. If I had a bird that I thought had it, I would certainly isolate it, number one. Number two, I would, before I ever picked that bird up again to even re-examine it, I would have gloves on, and I would make sure that I had a mask, a small particle mask or a paint mask of any kind, because this can become an internal infection for humans as well. Okay.
Really?
Yes, it can. And so it may be somewhat rare, but that's not the point. I've been down that road of stuff happens. I'm like a magnet lately for things happening to me, so I'm real cautious of what I'm doing.
So something like an N95 mask. They're cheap. You can get them at any drugstore.
Yep.
We found them at the dollar store before, and it's an N95 mask to wear. Sure. And you probably have some of those anyway when you're out cleaning the coop. It can get kind of dusty, so that's always a good thing to have in your, say, first aid kit or your kit for your coop, your cleaning kit. So another thing to add.
I would certainly recommend to folks that, there's people both sides of the fence with all of this. Some people, you know, it's no big deal. They can breathe all the stuff in, and other people want to go the mask route. I would probably say you're better off to go with the mask. There's enough people out there who have raised pigeons over the years that would tell you they wish they had a mask on now if they have pigeon lung, and from breathing all of the different dusts and organisms and stuff into their lungs and so on, and have difficulty breathing and so on. I know several people that have had that particular problem. So, a little precaution every now and then doesn't hurt. I don't believe that all of the stuff you have to run out and examine every chicken. And again, this cuts back to what we were talking about. That 5-gallon bucket becomes so powerful and becomes so valuable to you. And it doesn't take that long.
You know, as a matter of fact, from my perspective, it's a soothing thing to go and watch the birds and stuff. I mean, I think it's very therapeutic.
Yeah, I was going to say that the word we hear a lot, traveling, is very therapeutic. Absolutely, mm-hmm. the glass of wine on the back patio, watching them scratch out, you know, and things like that, or even in that atmosphere. So, yep, absolutely therapeutic.
Yep. So, these little, I guess you could call them scabs, whatever you want to call them, the flaking off of this skin of the head, the wattles comb. In the facial area, and if it should be spread to the feathered portions of the body, you know, they'll look like little flakes of skin, just like dandruff. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's the infective part. Left unchecked, this is what we would call a cutaneous mycosis. It's a big word for lesions that extend deeper into the tissue. And
okay.
This would end up like, kind of like, in a way, how a chicken pox on a human would leave a pox mark, or even on a chicken, on a comb, you know, leaves that little dimple or a little hole. This would do, you know, basically the same type of a thing, as far as, you know, that is concerned. So, like I said, I think that once you realize. And again, going back to the bucket, I hate to keep going back to it, but to me, it's a very, very important tool. When you examine these birds, you know what the norm is. You see, if you've got 10 birds, 20 birds, or whatever, and you're watching them and you're looking at them, you say, you know, everybody looks good. I don't see any of this. I don't see any of that. And I don't mean just favus. I'm just looking at birds, okay? And then you come out tomorrow, and there's a bird that looks odd to you. You'll be able to recognize it. That's the key. And almost all of these diseases that we've talked about, in one way, shape, form, or another, if you get on them first, the chances of it not spreading, the chances of a bird surviving it, and the chances of you not having to spend a ton of money to fix it are much, much better right there on that very first day that you recognize it, not a week or two later, you know, and then you find out that there's a... you know, problem running around in the coop, and all of a sudden everybody's got it. So it's just one of those things.
Let me also add there,
yeah.
Too, because when you were talking about that, it made me think that you know, yeah, the doc talks about going out there, sitting, handling them on a regular basis, watching them on a regular basis. But I don't want that to because we get so many calls where, hey. You know, my chickens were fine yesterday. I walk out today, and I've got a dead one. And you know that happens a lot. I know that happens a lot, and people have experienced that. And so I think one of the causes there that we've talked about on the show is chickens do a great job at hiding weakness and illness until the very last minute. In many cases, because there's that pecking order. If they show weakness, they may get pecked on. They may lose their position in pecking order, and then there may be cannibalism issues. And so I know that they do try to mask a lot of things to not upset that pecking order until the point to where it may be too late, or you just go out and find a dead chicken. So you may do and watch your birds every day and sit out there with the 5-gallon bucket and handle them and be the perfect chicken mama, but you still might, again, occasionally walk outside, dead chicken. And you said, well, they were just fine until I walked out today and they were dead. Well, they may not have just been fine, but that doesn't mean you did anything wrong or you didn't, you know, you missed something, because they are good at masking that. And I've got one quick question before I forget, Doc,
sure.
That was asked in the chat room, because I know you love the product and we push it a lot, and I think it's a valid question. The question was, is there an egg withdrawal time with Oxine, whether we're using it as a nasal flush or adding it to their water or using it as either a cleanser or a water additive or a nasal flush or what have you? Is there any concern there, or is there any information regarding that? But that was in the chat room, number one, I wanted to share with you.
Yeah, no, there is no problem using it at any time, whether internally or externally, spraying, putting it in the drinking water. Basically, Oxine, chlorine dioxide, is used to sanitize drinking water. that's why you're not going to have any problem with it, because when you use it as directed, you're using it at a level that the EPA says it's okay to use at. It is EPA, it is EPA approved for use in the drinking water of chickens. It is EPA approved for use in spraying over the tops of birds. The nasal flushing was my idea, but I don't see the big difference. We dilute it pretty much the same as you would to put it in the drinking water. So no hazard there. And if my memory serves me correctly, it's an OMRI product, so that means it's generally considered safe and has some organic properties to it as well. From what
so
I
it's kind of like you'll read information about if you're camping or if you're or you have issues with bad water and you see those things online where they recommend so many drops or so many teaspoons or tablespoons of bleach in your water to make it where it's potable and drinkable, kind of the mm-hmm. kind of same category there. And I'm going to share this with you too, because people will often say, well, chickens will know what to eat and what not to eat, and chickens will know not to eat anything that's poisonous or bad for them, because you hear that a lot. And the case may be, I know in specific cases we've heard of them, someone insulated their coop with styrofoam sheets, and next thing you know, the chickens are pecking at it and eating little styrofoam balls. But someone, I won't mention their name on the air, even though they've come public with this and put it on my Facebook page, but they said, I have to confess, I was keeping 9 birds in my bathroom, and they decided that they liked linoleum and ate about 1 square foot of linoleum flooring. So I wanted to share with that because as a learning tool that you would think that chickens would know what and what not to eat in many cases, but here's a perfect example that his 9 chickens just ate about 1 square foot of linoleum flooring out of his bathroom. Yeah. So there you have
and
it.
my guess is, and this is a little bit of an educated guess, long time doing this and some basic research, not necessarily about eating the linoleum, but my basic guess there would be that they probably ate that not because they were so much interested in eating it. They ate it because of boredom. Boredom for birds or animals creates all kinds of behavioral problems. Some animals are more prone to it than others, just like humans. There are humans that really have to be around other humans almost all the time, or they are very unhappy, and then there are others who could take them or leave them, and any spectrum there in between. And some of these things, the lack of, for instance, children that are not properly exposed to other humans grow up with all kinds of issues because of the fact that they've not been exposed to other people. Some of the things may work out for them okay, and others are lifelong problems. Same thing with chickens, with ducks, with turkeys, with horses, with dogs, with cats. We see this a lot with lab animals that are constantly in the same environment, day in, day out. That's why a lot of your zoos now have gone to these what they call enrichment, okay? Because the boredom of standing there all day long as a bison eating hay and pooping is not where it's at. You know, they're used to engaging each other and banging into things and knocking stuff down or whatever they do. So they try to do more enrichment with them to keep them from getting bad habits and so on. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was part of the issue, maybe not eating it so much because they liked it, but because it was there. And again, it cuts back to what we've talked about many times. You know, just because they eat it doesn't make it healthy, whether it be styrofoam. And on the flip side of that, I don't know any bird, and I've known a ton of birds that have eaten styrofoam and loads of it, and I've never seen it do anything to them. Certainly nutritionally it isn't helping them. I've never seen any bird, to my knowledge, have an overall issue with it. So it's an interesting thing. Behavioral, and we've talked loads about behavioral stuff, and we will touch on some more behavioral stuff this coming year as well. you know, there are all kinds of breakthroughs coming down the pike for all kinds of different things, human and otherwise. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show here or not, but, you know, we've talked, I know that we've talked about this. We've talked about gut health. We've talked about probiotics. We've talked about the value of a probiotic when you put it in the bird's water and or feed, and how it enhances the gut, and that how in humans there are some differences between people who have schizophrenia and people who are considered normal, the type of gut microbiota that they have, the microbes in the gut, those that have some of the people, not all, that have schizophrenia can relate back to the problem with the gut flora and things of that nature. But here's another one. There's a company getting ready to, here this month or next, market here in the U.S. a new species of Lactobacillus reuteri is what it's called, and this is one you can get behind a little bit. It has a double-blind study in humans to as a tag for it. It's going to be a patented product, I believe, but this product alone by itself can lower your blood cholesterol almost 12% and be natural at the same time. So, I mean, there are great breakthroughs and all kinds of things coming down the pike, and this is one of them. And if anybody's interested, they shoot me an email. I'll find the my literature on it and get them the name of it. And I think it's available in Canada first, but it doesn't matter. My point is, gut health is so important to the overall well-being of not just humans but chickens as well. We talked about 70% or so of the bird's immune cells lying in the intestine. Bad intestine, bad bird, bad behavior, bad health, everything. And so, you know, all of this is important. But a lot of breakthroughs coming down the road. And you know, on the behavioral side, we talked about circadian incubation, of how they're doing now, some changing the temperature up or down, getting birds more acclimated to cold after they're born and more acclimated to the heat. Different ones acclimated to a particular smell, so they'll eat a particular type of food, and so on and so forth. Just great stuff. And it just goes to show you that every abnormality that's come down the road isn't always caused by what you eat. A whole lot of it has to do with your environment, and a whole lot of it has to do with the environment in the womb itself. And that, to me, is fantastic. And, you know, we have that researcher out, I think, at University of Arizona, who has been taking the embryonating eggs and turning off genes in the eggs, and showing that the genes are there for the chicken to have a much longer tail like a dinosaur, you know, and just goes to show you those things are turned off. If you turn them on, they're going to have a huge tail. So it's what happens lots of times in uterine is how something is going to turn out. Not always, but most of the time. And then we do have problems with certain things we eat and so on and so forth. I read an article the other day that said that there were half a billion, that's B with a billion with a B, people worldwide that are considered obese now. Half a billion people.
Half a billion.
Half a billion. And that's a lot of folks.
I know if they're using the BMI, isn't that what it's called, the BMI index?
Yeah.
I can see that shooting out a number like that, because you could take the most fit athlete football player, and there's no way, lineman or linebacker, and they're never going to meet BMI. So I know a lot of doctors now are frowning on BMI and trying to figure out something that's more accurate.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. And I can see how that number would come about if they were using BMI, especially because it's some of my
favorites. The article didn't say. As a matter of fact, I saved it to my favorites because I happened to come across it, and I did not read it from top to bottom. I read about half of it and didn't have the time to finish it, but I'm going to go back and finish it up and see what else they had to say. But it is alarming when you come right down to it at the end of the day. I'm going to move on to this, how it's basically spread bird to bird. Any other bird, human or otherwise, contaminated coops, equipment, so on and so forth. One thing that I do want to say is that these little, we talked about it before I get off on this other tangent of mine here, these little flakes that come off, they are infective anywhere up to a year, depending on the outside temperature. So, you know, disinfecting
if you have a problem like that, or most any other problem. Good disinfection, good hygiene goes a long way. This one is no different. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This affects chickens, turkeys, ducks, birds, humans, dogs, cats, and other mammalian species. How we would treat it, depending on the degree of infection, I would leave, you know, the overall idea of which way you're going to go up to the individual, as I usually always do. But the fungicides, ketoconazole and fluconazole, are two products that are used for controlling this, both internally and externally. If you want to mix up some oxine and put that on a cotton ball and whatever and wash the affected areas with that, that will go a long way to keeping it from spreading and could possibly even take care of it. It depends on how well it soaks into the skin and gets to the root of the problem, because remember what we said before, this can become a deep cutaneous mycosis becomes a deeper infection. If you're not getting that part, you're just taking care of the top, then it keeps coming back. The Nizoral shampoo, when it was available, if you can get your hands on any of that anywhere, or a similar type product that has ketoconazole in it, I would just give the bird a bath in it, using precautionary measures for myself. If I was going to give him a bath, I'd some eye cover, some breathing cover, and certainly gloves and that kind of thing. But I brought it back out because it is something that is affecting people basically as we speak, and is becoming more and more of a problem that I do see here in the office. And when I say see in the office, people calling me and sending me pictures with problems. I don't physically see the birds, but not a bad thing to know that it's still out mm-hmm. there, and it seems to be, you know, somewhat worse. But if caught early, like I said, it can be, you know, something that is curable and can be taken care of. But again, get that 5-gallon bucket out, put it outside. I intend to do it when the birds are here, and use it as part of my own therapy for my own head. And
I guess you're going to have 1,000 birds.
I'll tell you, if I had the room, it wouldn't bother me, because I have, then there's always the outside possibility that, you know, I could pick up sticks and move somewhere else too. So that's always, something that's in the back of my mind as a possibility. Probably more remote than most, but I'd like to own some other types of birds as well. I've got my eye on some Norfolk grays, which are a really pretty bird. A couple different species of ducks. I like wood ducks, mandarin ducks, that kind of thing. Just don't have the room for it, and right at this moment, not the time for it either. But I'll be happy with what's coming. They're good, hardy birds, and I recommended to a client here not too long ago who has a disabled child and was looking for a bird that would be a good companion bird, and recommended they get some Nankins. And I got an email the other day from that person, and they said that they couldn't be happier with them. They're just, you know, loving, friendly, talk to them all the time, and not hostile like some birds can be. So it's kind of a cool thing, and they are a heritage breed. So every time you have some Nankins in your possession, you have a piece of history. I believe they go all the way back as a Spanish breed, back to the 1500s. So, and not everybody's got them. They are bantam. They're beautiful. Good mothers, yeah. and the roosters are usually not overly not overly crazy. So,
Connie in the chat room said if she didn't have a husband, she'd have 1,000 birds.
Well, I imagine there's probably a lot of people who probably probably do that. There's always something that holds some people back, I'm sure. But here it's space, and basically not even supposed to have birds here, period, let alone some roosters. So we're trying to mitigate that as best we can. I think it'll be fine. I don't think it's going to be an issue, but, well, you never know.
Tell us the breed of that bird you were just talking about in the chat room.
It's called a Nankin, N-A-N-K-I-N.
And actually, if you go back into our archives, Thompson, I can't even imagine where it would be. We're approaching 800 episodes, but you might even be able to Google Nankin Chicken Whisperer and Christine Heinrich, and that episode may actually come up. But Christine Heinrich, Pat Foreman, and myself, we had an episode that the Nankin was the particular breed we talked about too. So you might be able to find that archive of the show if you look hard enough or go back into the archives. So and if you don't find it on Google, then you if you search the archive shows, she would have come on a Tuesday, and it would have been the fourth Tuesday of the month when Christine would normally come on, the last Tuesday or the fourth Tuesday of the month. So just if you want to learn more about that breed as well, we've talked about it.
If anybody is interested in getting some of them for free, at least the eggs, Colonial Williamsburg has a small flock of them. Now, how pure Nankin they are, I've heard from people that, you know, you get stuff from them, all the eggs aren't necessarily Nankins. I don't know that to be necessarily true, if that was a one-time deal, somebody messed up, but you can talk to them there, and I can't remember the woman's name. I've helped them out with some other breeds. They had a problem of pecking, and I sent some Pindle's Peepers down there to them, and it was a funny exchange. She wanted to know. She said, well, you know, this is Colonial Williamsburg. I said, well, you've got a choice. I said, you can let them pick each other to death, or you can put these people. Well, what do they look like? I said, well, I'll send them to you. Don't want to use them, throw them away. But it's kind of an interesting thing. You know, I don't think, you know, back in the day they probably didn't have anything like that, I'm sure. But, you know, whatever. I can't remember. The Nankins weren't the ones doing the picking. There was some other breed and whatever, but... I know you can get eggs from them. I know of people who have done that. And somebody wants to get started for practically nothing, you could probably get a start there, and hopefully they'll send you some decent Nankin stuff. Either that or the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy could probably put you on to somebody that would have eggs for you, too.
So. Yeah, that was mentioned in the chat room, the ALBC, and that's ALBC-USA.org, ALBC-USA.org. So, yep, absolutely. All righty, awesome information, Doc. I appreciate you coming on. Sorry we got a little late start there, but nonetheless, we got a start, and it was a great show, a couple of great topics with Favus and the tube feeding, which we talk about on the show on occasion, and now people can get a little bit of grasp of what's in detailed with that. And we appreciate you always coming on. If you like what you heard today, then you can listen to a lot of archives with Peter Brown on this show. He comes on every single Monday, and before that he came on twice a month for a while, so you can go back and look it up. And they're all labeled, the topic that we talked about. You can listen to the archive at 3 a.m. if you want to. You're having a hard time getting to sleep and you want to learn about coccidiosis or Merrick's or anything like that, then you can go in and tune in and learn about your chickens and maybe doze off at the same time at 3 a.m. So 24/7. But, Doc, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to another great episode next Monday with you right here on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate it, my friend.
My pleasure.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All righty, that was Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. Find hey, if they don't have it, you don't need it. That's just something we say here, but it is a firststatevetsupply.com, firststatevetsupply.com, and one of our most popular shows here every Monday, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So that's going to wrap up another show today. Again, tune in tomorrow. I'm very excited. We've got Prepper Penny. You go find her on her Facebook page. Tell her you're looking forward to her being on the show tomorrow. Prepper Penny. Not sure the exact topic yet, because we want to welcome her and make her feel comfortable. So I told her a good topic that she's comfortable with and she's experienced with to kind of break the ice and get her comfortable with talking on air. But, hey, she does the prepping, she does the food storage, she does the coupon clipping, the creative, crafty things for the homestead. So I think it's going to be right up your alley, both ladies and men out there that listen to the show.
And so we hope that you'll be able to tune in tomorrow for that great new episode with Prepper Penny right here, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. And we thank you very much for tuning in today. And again, thank you so much for all the wonderful kind and blessings and comments you left on our Facebook page over the weekend when we kind of went from a chicken Facebook page to a family-oriented new baby Facebook page for 3 days. So we appreciate you bearing with us there as Proud Daddy had to show off his new addition, Schneider Party of Four. Schneider Party of Four. I have to get used to that. So now we go into a restaurant occasionally, and it's like, how many? I'm like, 2.5. You know, Caleb's 21 months old. He was 2.5. Now what do we say? We say 2 3/4. I think we'll just say 2 adults, 2 high chairs. Gotta love it. So thanks for bearing with us, and we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget to enter that awesome coop contest from Rincey.com. You can get all that information at our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and you can become a follower on Twitter. That's @backyardpoultry. Hope you have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. God bless everybody. Well, I'll play the theme song here in a minute if my mouse will cooperate. Have a great day.